Hey everyone, welcome to Garden Fork Radio. This is the eclectic, I also thought about calling it the Whatever DIY Show podcast. I have a YouTube channel called Garden Fork, and this is the kind of the second half of that, really. It's me and my friends talking about what we find interesting, and it ends up a lot of other people find it interesting as well. So if you're first time here, welcome. If you are a regular, sit back, pay attention to the road, because you're probably in your car, and listen to us. Today, Will and I are going to talk about Facebook, aren't we, Will?
Yes, definitely a fun topic.
Almost a pyrotechnic topic.
Ooh, yeah, lately it's been in the news everywhere, and we actually even received some email from some folks. I know you and I got an email on it, and you know, people have a lot of questions, and they're like, what do we do? So I thought, well, maybe we should talk about it a little bit.
Do you have the email?
I do not have the
email. Okay, well, you talk, and I'll find it.
Okay.
You know, we have a executive producer whose job this is to do these things for us, and he's not doing it.
I didn't get my green M&Ms. I'm very disappointed.
I have a, you know, do you know why Van Halen stipulated in their contract to have a bowl of M&Ms with no brown M&Ms in it?
Actually, I do. Do you want to know why?
Do you know? You tell your story.
Well, so I got to talk to some of the road people when they were on the road for one of the pyro gigs that we did. And I had asked about that, why that was. And actually, the reason why they had in there was very specific. And it's actually a really great idea, which was if they walked into the green room and they found out that the people didn't follow the directions, it means they probably didn't read the instructions or the stipulations that were in the agreement. And it was kind of like one of those things they threw in as a check thing to see if they followed all the other details, because they had a lot of safety protocols and a lot of security protocols. And they found that people weren't reading the agreements and they were just signing them and whatever. And then they would test people on it, or test the facility or the promoter or the producer or whoever was doing the show, by looking up and seeing, oh, did they bring out the brown M&Ms or green M&Ms or whatever it was? And it was just a little way to test the contract.
Right. So if they went into the green room and the brown M&Ms had not been removed, they knew they were screwed.
Yeah. Or at least that they should check the other details of the agreement. And a lot of it had to do with safety and security at the time, because they were touring and there was a lot of things where people were sneaking backstage and trying to get in by the band and doing things like that. And so they kind of came up with this as a way to figure it out, that if they didn't have the brown M&Ms, that they better look at all of the other things with the tourists. Is the lighting right? Is the cables right? Even the pyro and all that stuff falls into that. So.
Yeah. Exactly. Where did I hear? I think I heard that. I think one of the Van Halen guys was on WTF, the WTF podcast. So
I listen to that all the time. Now that you sent that over to me, you sent me the one about Alice Cooper, and I started listening there, and now I'm hooked. So I listen to Garden Fork and Mark Maron.
Yeah. So today we were talking about Facebook. It's been in the news a lot. It's become kind of integral to a lot of people's lives, and people are talking about leaving Facebook. And Kent, one of our listeners, wrote us an email. And so I thought I would read the email and I will respond, okay?
Sounds good.
Will and Eric. I like how he puts Will first. I respect you both highly and love following you both. That said, I've always been suspicious of Facebook and was going to pull the plug regardless of the latest news. My only hesitation is being able to continue to follow both of you, which I know I can get through podcasts and YouTube. I suppose I can still go to your respective websites. The Garden Fork discussion group has been really valuable for me. Yay. I would truly appreciate your respective thoughts. And that is from Kent. So
I think one of the things we should start with is maybe back up a little bit and inform people where this is coming from. And I think what the concern is before we get into what should you do about it.
Okay, well, you go. You sent me a ton. Will, by the way, Will sent me a bunch of information. And I was like, fine, you be in charge of that.
Well, I think a lot of people, they might hear about it because like there's this trending hashtag, you know, hashtag delete Facebook. And it's in a lot of the news. If you follow their stock is taken a tremendous hit in the last week and a half. And it all stems back to something that started in 2014, which was Facebook is a social network. So everybody is connected to everybody on the network. And that's kind of how it works. So you can keep track of your friends and colleagues and business stuff and fun stuff and everything else. And everybody's kind of interconnected to each other. Well, in the process of doing that, everybody shares different levels of information. So what happened back in 2014 was there was a company that was related to a company called Cambridge Analytica. And basically what they did was they hired some people to gather some information from Facebook so that they could figure out target marketing and figure out campaigning and figure out information about them. And in the process of it, by collecting a small number of individuals, they were able to basically extrapolate a large amount of information about a large number of individuals, because back then Facebook didn't have as stringent policies with regarding sharing and privacy policies, which of course have been updated for the times today. But a lot of it came out in the news, and that's what a lot of people are talking about. So now people are kind of coming to realize, wow, if I share this stuff into Facebook, it goes into this machine, and then that can be shared anywhere. I mean, I'll be honest, myself, I don't read the terms and conditions of a lot of things. I just click accept. What people didn't realize is what they're accepting and what they're sharing was being collected by other people and used in certain ways that people might not like.
Right. They used it to craft political campaign ads and stuff like that. And it's blowing up now, but it's been going on. I mean, data gathering has been going on for years in various ways. It's just that Facebook did make it very easy. And these guys they were smart the way they did it. So, and I think people are kind of having second thoughts about how much they share and what the social networks like Twitter and Facebook and Instagram know about them. And, what the government knows about them, that whole thing. So, and a lot of people are deleting their Facebook accounts or leaving. My really good friend Eric from over at Root Simple, who's West Coast Eric, we call him, has kind of divorced himself and his website from Facebook. And I'm kind of bummed. So
I think there's one other piece that a lot of people don't realize either, which is Facebook's integration into all sorts of functions on the internet and third-party apps. And if you get involved with, let's say, Instagram, you're essentially involved with Facebook. So just by deleting Facebook, you're not necessarily out of Facebook. And even if your friends are still on Facebook, you're still involved with Facebook. So I think to go into Kent's question, which is, hey, I want to leave Facebook, but I still want to interact with you guys and learn information. I think there is the nuclear option, which is deleting Facebook. But I also think that there's some options of a lot of people don't know how to change their privacy settings and update what they share. And you can control that, which would then make it more difficult for companies like this to get this information. Now, granted, does it stop it altogether? No, because you're part of a social network. But at the same point in time, a lot of people like using WhatsApp and all these different apps that Facebook is associated with, and now all of a sudden by shutting it off, you're also shutting off your access to all of those things also.
My big first suggestion is to go to the New York Times or Lifehacker and type in Facebook security settings or something like that. You could also just Google it, but you could get some spammy sites. They both have really good articles on how to kind of put up a defensive wall between you and Facebook, yet still be on Facebook. And the other thing I know is that Google Chrome and the Firefox browsers have add-ons which can essentially dial back a lot of the stuff that Facebook throws at you when you're on the Facebook site using a web browser. Using the app, it's a little bit different. And you're giving away, I think, a lot more information if you're using the Facebook app on your phone than you are when you log in to Facebook through a web browser.
I think one thing that a lot of people do, and I found myself doing it and now I've actually stopped, which was, have you ever gone to a website and it says you can log in with your email and your password, or you can log in via Facebook?
Yeah.
And if you do the login via Facebook, Facebook has now access to all of the information of whatever you're doing inside of that website, inside of that app, inside of that product.
Yep.
And one of the practices I've started doing now is not using that and actually disconnecting it. So I use Facebook for the social media aspects of the weekend homestead and my family life and things like that. But when I log into the Wall Street Journal or whatever, instead of logging in via Facebook and then they track what I do there, I use my username and password. Because if there was a time that I ever wanted to disconnect from Facebook or leave, the second I leave, all of those sites, all of those apps, and all those products that I'm also logged in with via Facebook are now all, I've become inactive and I have to go create them again. So it's a way to kind of separate your account. The other thing that's really great about that is if my Facebook account gets hacked, they don't have access to everything else that I have access to, if that makes sense.
Right. So it's basically dialing back. You can still be part of Facebook, but not be giving out nearly as much information. You can also just, when you go to Facebook, if you just, you can have these little short links on the side of the browser and just go to the Garden Fork discussion group, see what's going on, and then log back off again. And if you do it in a private browser, so you, I know in Firefox you can do a private browser, it will delete all the cached data and cookies that Facebook has set in your browser, because it will track you. Once you leave Facebook, if you have other windows open, it's tracking you all the time. So I open up a separate private window for Facebook, and then I log off and I close that window and I quit out of Firefox, and it flushes all the data. From what I understand, if anyone else knows more, please email us, radio@gardenfork.tv. But they're going to build a profile about you. The problem is it's all your friends, because a lot of them, you join Facebook and they're like, oh, well, let us have access to your contact directory on your computer. And you're like, okay. And so, boom, they've got your phone number. And you didn't give it to them. Your buddy did, you know?
Well, I actually had that happen in real life. I was updating some information and I was moving some emails from one account to another account. I moved all the emails and I didn't realize that I had the synchronization for a contact ready to go. When I woke up in the morning, it said, you have 445 new friends on Facebook. And I'm like, whoa, how did that happen? And I went back and looked, and Facebook basically said, oh, here's a whole new pile of contacts you just loaded in. Let me scan them and see how many of them I can make a connection to you for. I didn't remember asking it to do that, but what I didn't realize is I had the little box checked in the privacy settings. It said it could scan my contacts and emails to find other contacts to connect with.
Yep.
Just so that easy.
You got to turn it all off. So we will link to a bunch of this, but if you go to a reliable website that you trust, it could be the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times. I really like Lifehacker and the New York Times. Ars Technica is another really good one. I wouldn't type in Google how to adjust my privacy settings, because you could get some wackadoo person is trying to do bad things to you. But I would not leave. I think we can affect change from within. Much like if you're a customer of a business, you can go to that business and say, I don't like what you're doing, X, and affect change. If you're just on the outside, jumping up down saying, I don't like this, they're more likely to ignore you. If you are active on the Facebook website, I think they pay attention to those people a lot more than do the people jumping and shouting on the outside. I'm all about kind of getting people together, even if they disagree, and maybe trying to find a solution. I find that works very well, rather than people quitting and not talking, just yelling, if that makes any sense.
So I guess, to summarize, maybe our response to Kent is deleting Facebook definitely is an option, but I think that there's an option of updating your privacy settings where you can still get the benefits of Facebook without selling your soul to the machine, I guess is what you'd call it. I mean, you definitely have the option to do pull all together, but I think with the right privacy settings and the right way you interact, and you just limit your actions into the Facebook network, as you'd say, I think that a person could have a good experience still without having to worry about all the negative side effects.
Yeah, I've also dialed back a lot of my friends who post some pretty scary stuff. And I'm just kind of, this is going to be Eric on a tangent a little bit of politics here, but I'm just kind of stunned what people will believe. First of all, it's posted on Facebook. And second, they believe it and share it with everybody. And they're like, holy cow, look at this. And I'm like, how could you possibly believe that? So you can be friends with somebody but unfollow their feed. Or you could specifically unfollow stuff that they repost from a particular page or website. You know, if you don't like the New York Post, you can unfollow the New York Post on Facebook so their stuff doesn't come up in your stream. You can dial back your news feed to almost nothing. If you just want happy puppy pictures from Garden Fork, you can make it happen. It takes a little bit of work. And that's kind of what I've done.
Wait. Let's rewind for a second here. You're telling me everything on Facebook is not true? I thought if it was posted online, it has to be true.
I'm sorry, Will.
Oh, that one last item, and this came from the Lifehacker article. If you do decide to leave, I don't know if a lot of people know this or not, but you can go into Facebook, the website, not the app on your phone, but the website itself, and Facebook will allow you to get all of your pictures and photos and postings and everything back, and they'll send it to you in one big zip file before you leave. So I know a lot of people were posting in the comments on the Lifehacker piece, I was kind of reading through it, saying, well, if I leave all the pictures that I have posted or got from my friends about their kids and everything like that, I'll lose access to all that stuff. In all reality, Facebook will allow you to download that entire thing as a big zip file if you want to even back it up for your own. So if your account gets hacked or you need to close it all of a sudden or whatever it is, you have all that information. That's one thing that I did last night, because I never realized all this data and all this stuff about the weekend homestead and all these things I've posted and created can all be recaptured again and not lost if something bad did happen.
Yeah. Oh, and one other afterthought, because I have always afterthoughts, is you can also use a VPN, a virtual private network, to basically create a connection between you and Facebook or you and YouTube or you and Google. So your local cable provider is not garnering all this information, or your cellular phone company is not collecting information as well. They have more information than anybody. If you're using browsers on a cellular phone, they're tracking an immense amount of data because they have your location. They have what you're looking at, what you're typing in. So basically, you could use a VPN on a desktop computer to log into Facebook and really dial back a lot of what they're garnering about you. I have a VPN on my cell phone and on my desktop machines and my iPad. And if you want to stream YouTube videos, you might have to turn off the VPN because it gets a little dodgy sometimes. But
it seems to cache a lot, or like kind of pause for a minute, then play, then pause for a minute, then play is what
right.
I found.
But there is deals. I actually on Lifehacker, they will list. They have these sales, and they have an affiliate link with the VPN probably. But they use, there's three or four VPNs that they were like, and they run these sales. You can get, for $30 for a year or something, or $50 for 2 years. I bought a lifetime one. It was on super sale, Black Friday sale, and I got a lifetime VPN, and it works pretty darn good. So. There you go. I won't tell you which one because then you can find me. All right. So, Ken, radio@gardenfork.tv. Let us know. Okay? I would love to hear from you. Hey, real quick here. I was wondering if you wanted to join the Garden Fork email list. It's Maura Eric. I don't know if you want that or not. But the best way to do that, if you go to the gardenfork.tv site, there are signups all over the place. There should be one on every page. Also, in the show notes for this show, if you're listening to it in the iTunes app or one of the other podcast app, to click on the little, I think you click on the little text thumbnail of the show and the notes will pop up and there's a link in there. Or just go to gardenfork.tv and there should be a sign up there. All right? Thank you. So, is winter over, sir?
No, I have about, I think, 30 inches of snow in the yard yet. We're just actually going to tap trees for maple season probably this weekend.
Wow, my neighbors are almost done with the season. The first part of it was pretty much, just 1,000%, and now it's kind of slowed down. So interesting. You're much farther north than I am. So
we're actually further north than Toronto. So it's I have a friend in Toronto who said that to me. He's like, "Wow, your property is actually further north than we are." So we're pretty much Canada at this point.
Hey. There's a couple of Canadian YouTube guys I watch, and it's kind of. And the Canadian accent is very similar to the Wisconsin accent, and I kind of slip into it,
They'll say things like, "Oh, the process" and the "about," are kind of the two ones that'll be a dead giveaway if they're from Canada, which is great because I have some friends from Canada, but yeah, like Peter McKinnon always says that it's about this, or whatever, and yeah. It's like, yep, you're from Canada.
You are. I'm getting ready to plant snow peas, and you're like tapping trees.
The planting thing, I see, and I said this last time I was on the show too, is I see all these folks online and you guys posting in the Garden Fork discussion group, you know, the gardens you're planting and everything else. I'm like, I would have to snowblow for a half an hour before I could even see the dirt, before I could even get to planting.
So do you have a shorter season then? I guess that's obvious.
Yeah, it goes for 3 weeks, basically from the first part of June till about mid-July is our growing season, and then that's it. In all reality, it goes from Memorial Day to basically Labor Day is your safe bet for planting.
All right, because we, I will find out how much snow is up at the house, but I'm going to dig through to the raised beds, and it's kind of a, maybe I'm a masochist, but I will throw in some sugar snap peas, and then I will also start sugar snap peas as transplants in my basement. I'm going to build a new grow light out of metal framing and LED shop lights I bought at Costco this weekend. So that'd be fun.
So let me ask you this, because this is an email that I had sent to you. And I said, let's go through the debate of hoop house versus greenhouse. Because in my scenario, I need to figure out how to extend my growing season. And I watched a lot of your videos about doing grow lights and growing things in the house. And I've heard you and Rick talk about it a lot and things like that. And we're looking at that. But then the other side of it is I see a lot of hoop house and greenhouses and all these different things. So I thought, you know, I'm going to ask the expert, Eric, hoop house or greenhouse? And which one would you go with and why? Because I know you have both.
Well, I have a greenhouse. It's attached to the, I have a walkout basement and it's attached to the house. The problem is, it's in the wrong place for sunlight. So,
what do you mean by that?
Well, it doesn't, it's not oriented. The house isn't oriented, or the greenhouse isn't oriented to get maximum sunlight during the day. It gets sun only half of the day. That being said, in the middle of summer, it's like 100 degrees in there, but I use it more. I maybe put some seedlings in there. I like to hang out in there and shoot videos. But the greenhouse was there when I bought the house and I fixed it up. And it's a neat room to be in. If you like, in the winter, sometimes it heats up nice. It gets some like solar energy. But I actually really like hoop houses a lot better than a greenhouse.
It seems that hoop houses, there's a lot less expense to get involved with it if you were going to try it. I mean, a lot of them don't seem to be long-term solutions versus a greenhouse where you get the hard plastic and it tends to last a little bit longer versus the hoop house where the plastic seems to go and kind of degrade after a year or two, I guess. What is your experience on that?
Oh, yeah. The greenhouses, there's a website called Charlie's Greenhouse that has a lot of them. I don't know much about them, but I've looked on there. They, you know, if it's an infrastructure investment, you know, you're going to have to put down at least some sand and gravel and somehow anchor the greenhouse into the ground. And it can get wicked hot in the middle of the summer, so you're not going to be using it then. But, you know, if you live in a milder climate, you could four-season garden in it. I like the hoop houses because it's portable. I can put the hoop house, we are called a mini greenhouse, over a raised bed. I put them on in the fall, and then throughout the winter it gets cold in that bed, but then in really early spring I can lift that hoop house and plant seeds in that bed probably a month before I normally could because of the solar heating. And then I get my seedlings to come up, and when it's warm enough I just literally lift the hoop house off. I hide it behind the log shed because it's kind of ugly looking. And my bed grows like a regular bed. And then in the fall again, I could plant some fall greens in September. And then when it starts to get too cold, I can go get the hoop house again, drop it on top. And I've extended my season another month that way in the fall as well.
Do you have any issues with the plastic cracking because of the cold and the hot and the sunlight? Or is there a way to, like, what type of plastic? Do you just buy plastic at Home Depot, or do you have to buy some special plastic to get it last longer?
I actually buy it at Harbor Freight because it's cheaper. But I looked into this because I made a video about my broken hoop house and asked people for suggestions, and it was really great, the feedback. And they said you need the UV stable greenhouse plastic. And so I looked at it. I looked on Amazon for it. It's quite expensive, and it says it'll last 2 or 3 years. Yet my hoop house plastic from Harbor Freight or Home Depot, if I take care of it, it lasts 2 or 3 years also. So I'm kind of torn because the roll of the greenhouse plastic is it's like $50, I think.
Yeah.
So
I mean, it's a lot. We were looking at greenhouse just because I have all the windows from the remodel that we were going to use to build, you know, greenhouse, and then the only thing I'd have is the expense of the plastic to make the roof.
Right.
So the sides, that material, nominal lumber, is pretty inexpensive to get put together. The windows for the side would be inexpensive. It's just the plastic for the roof would be the expensive part.
Yeah, they sell this stuff called Twin Wall, which is a greenhouse solid. It's for walls and roofs, and it makes a really nice greenhouse.
Is it that corrugated stuff?
No, I have corrugated on my roof of my greenhouse, but it's almost like a double glazed window. It has two layers of polycarbonate in it, so
wow.
it helps trap some of the heat. But as far as using the cheap plastic, if it's supported well throughout, you know, on your hoop house, you have the PVC hoops. That's why they're called hoop houses, I think. As you can see, I'm motioning at the microphones. You can see what I'm talking about here. But, you know, the hoops, they go over and they form an arc over your bed. If you run some string or 1x1s or lath or 1x2s between those hoops to provide more support for the plastic, it will last longer. Because what happens is the snow weighs on the plastic, and it can then break the plastic and it slits open, or wind can come. I've had a number of tree limbs missile into my hoop houses and blow a hole, and the greenhouse UV plastic is not going to prevent that. So,
interesting. Well, we'll see what happens. I'm going to research it to kind of build some infrastructure this year, and then we'll probably give it a good run next year.
If you can find someone that's like replacing, if they have to replace their well pump and they've got the old school PVC in that hole, they have to replace the PVC. So you could get the PVC pipe for free. Someone might have it laying in their yard. If you do that, if you could find the PVC pipe for free, the thing costs maybe $20 to build.
Yeah, I've used, there's like a FreeCycle app that you can find that you can get free stuff where people post
careful.
That on there.
It's an app on your phone. Be careful.
I know. Well, I was going to say the other one that's kind of a neat one is Facebook has a new marketplace that they've been at least advertising in the Twin Cities. And it's kind of like Craigslist, except that it's into Facebook and people post free stuff on there all the time. Like, hey, I got a pile of pallets. You know, I just recently picked up a pile because we're going to start maple syrup. And the guy just had it posted on Facebook, and I just searched for it and found it. So
it's careful.
I know.
Anyway, but yeah, if you can find for free the PVC pipe, boom.
Perfect.
And I think I've got like about 5 or 6 videos, which we will link in the show notes here, about hoop houses, because I just like making them. Also,
I knew you're the expert on it, so that's why I figured I'd ask.
Cattle fencing, or people call it pig or goat fencing at Tractor Supply, makes a good hoop house as well. If you don't want to use the PVC, you can roll this stuff over into an arc, build a frame, build ends, run some support through with like a 1x2 or lath. That does pretty good job too.
Is that the same thing as that stuff they use for like doing concrete, where you see the kind of mesh and they lay it in there for the concrete to make it stronger?
Right. Yeah, I have a video about it. It's not as strong. If you have a heavy snow, it can warp it. I've discovered that. The PVC is a little stronger, but the concrete reinforcing wire, it's like 1, 2, 3, boom, done. All you have to do is bend it over like a barrel or something, and you've got a nice arc, nail it to a frame, and it's built. There you go. You learned so much on this call.
It's been great. You know, we talked about Facebook and how they're tracking everything that we're saying and doing right now, and then how to grow stuff in the garden. Anything else you want to cover?
I have some viewer mails.
Awesome. Let's hear it.
Well, it's related to Charlie Pup, and we ended up that she had a stroke. I wrote about it on the website. We talked about it with Rick. We were talking about amazing medicine. And Andrea, who is a certified veterinary technician, asked, hey, Eric, was it Lyme related? Does she eat compost mushrooms? Both can cause neurosigns. Was she put on antibiotics and any blood work done? So she had lots of stuff done, many thousands of dollars worth. She had initial blood work looking for possible cancer links as well. Lyme, looking for Lyme as well. She had then she had an MRI, not a CT scan. It's a sonogram and X-rays and more blood work at the Animal Medical Center, and it all came up negative. She has some age-related spine degeneration, but I think we all have that. But the red flag were these two gray ovals in the neck, in her neck vertebrae, in the spinal cord, and that was an indicator for a canine stroke. It was kind of, there's a picture on the website. If you go to Garden Fork, there's a blog post I wrote about it. So yeah, she, they had a lot of work done, but that was neat of Andrea to ask about that.
Yeah. Are older dogs more susceptible to this, or can this happen to any dog at any time?
I don't know. I just, you know, we never saw her having a stroke. You know, all of a sudden she was just kind of wobbly. You know?
Sure. So no, that makes sense. It's always difficult to try to figure out, because like a dog can't talk to you and say, hey, this is what's going on. So you have to look at the signs and the symptoms and kind of follow up with the vet and so on. So it's great that you guys at least figured out kind of what's going on and what you can do going forward.
Yeah. And Andrea actually asked another question about seed starting videos, because there's a bunch on the site. Hey, Eric, I tried the paper towel tube pots a few years ago. It was difficult, either them drying out or wet and got moldy. Any suggestions for a happy medium? I would start out with sterile seed starting mix, not potting soil. Seed starting mix, sterile, works the best. And you actually don't want to keep them too wet. The other thing is you can have a fan, if you ideally an oscillating fan or a really cheap, tiny, like 3-inch kind of fan you could buy at the dollar store. Keeping air movement over the paper, the seed pots, it will dry them out, but it will also keep some mold from forming, and it will make your seedlings, the stalks of them, much stronger, because essentially they're growing with a little bit of wind back and forth on them. The other thing is there will be sometimes a green kind of mold on your seed starting pots, and that, I think, is pretty much normal. I get that, and my seeds still grow. What a lot of times what happens is with a seed coming up, it gets too moist, and it gets, it's not called blossom end rot. I can't remember what it's called, seedling rot or something, where it just, it snaps in half and dies, and that's from too much moisture in your thing. So there is a fine line, and it's kind of a thing you have to discover on your own, I think.
Now, when you're talking about that mold, is it the white wispy stuff that looks kind of like cotton that you sometimes get if everything gets moldy, or is it like a green algae looking kind of mold?
Mine is green. Maybe Andrea's is different. It's just they need less water than you think is the key here. I mean, I keep them fairly wet, and as soon as I see the seeds come up, I don't water them nearly as much. And then I have some self-wicking trays for some seed starting, and that works really well. But with the paper pots, I make these little cool square paper pots. I'll link to it in the show notes here. They're fun, but they dry out faster. But you're not having all these plastic seed starting trays and stuff. Actually, Erin from The Impatient Gardener uses soil blocks, and I'm pretty sure she doesn't have a lot of problem with mold. And if you go to The Impatient Gardener and type in soil blocks, or I'll find a link and put in the show notes here. She's like the expert. I'm just talking.
Just along for the ride.
Yeah. And then Pat asked on the website, talking about Charlie Pup. Hey, Eric. Glad to hear Charlie Pup is okay. Did her vet tell you what was the cause of the stroke? Does Charlie Pup need to be in any special meds? No, we didn't know what caused it. I was wondering, you know, can a stroke be caused by a physical action? You know, because she's very physical and she'll stop on a dime and turn. But it was called technically it's called a vascular event. So no, and she is on a nerve drug called gabapentin, and she gets that three pills a day, I think. But that's the only thing, and then we just are keeping on her. But she's improving every day. She still has kind of a wobbly rear end, but she's got a lot of her strength back, and we started playing ball this week, which she is very happy about. And We were up at the house and I snowblowed a bunch of paths in the yard with our Troy-Bilt snowblower, sponsored by Troy-Bilt. Did a great job. And then, of course, the knucklehead, you know, I'm okay, stay on the paths. And then she wants to go over this way. So she just is plodding through 16 inches of snow like it's nothing, you know. So she's doing okay.
The paths in the snow always make me laugh when I think about it, because when we had dogs, it was kind of the same thing. We'd cut this racetrack all the way around, and occasionally the dog would take it, but most of the time it would just cut right through the middle. I'm like, I just made this path for you. Why can't you take the path? They go run into the snow and they're buried out there, and then you got to go get them.
Yeah, dogs don't read street signs. All right.
Nice.
So I think our listeners have gotten to their destination. What do you think?
Most definitely. I looking here at our list to see if there's anything else on the list here, and it looks like we've gotten everything.
Yeah, so if you want to use Facebook, maybe don't use the app. Use a web browser set into private mode, and consider a VPN. And let us know your thoughts, radio@gardenfork.tv. I would like to hear more about what people think. I know there's a couple of tech experts listening. So, yeah, I think I'll get an email shortly from Kevin, among some other people. All right, Will, where can we find you besides here?
I am on YouTube. I got to think about this because I'm like, which social media should I say? you can find me on YouTube at The Weekend Homestead. Otherwise, on Instagram under the same name, The Weekend Homestead. We post a lot of photos and stuff and then videos here and there. Spend a lot of time in the Garden Fork discussion group talking to people there, too.
Yeah, it's good there. The discussion group, it's kind of fun because you can share other stuff. It's not just me, you know, broadcasting stuff to you all. It's people posting pictures. There's a fella from Japan that posts pictures of his garden. Toshi, I'm going to ruin the name. Toshi Fuma.
Oh, his photos are great. It's so neat to see that because, like, they're a little bit different time frame and different plants and things like that. And just seeing his garden, it's so cool to see what he's doing.
Yeah, I love that. So, all right, everyone. So go out and do cool stuff and then come back and tell us about it here. Thank you, and we'll see you later. Garden Fork's theme music is used under license from uniquetracks.com.